dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the Special Forces in the War of Ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. We'll be guiding you around a special edition of Secure Freedom Radio with a distinguished public servant, a man who has been out of government and rendering great service in that capacity as well, who is a legend in his time, I must say, from his service in the Reagan administration, most especially as the Secretary of the Navy. His name is John Layman. I've had the privilege of knowing him for 30-odd years, going back to days when he was working in the National Security Council under, I believe, Gerry Ford, and he went on to many significant contributions, including the man who was putting together the 600-ship Navy for Ronald Reagan. Ah, those were the days. He subsequently has served as a member of the 9/11 Commission and most recently as a member of an alternative quadrennial defense review, a second opinion on the adequacy of the Defense Department's programs. And for all of these reasons, he's an extraordinary guest for us here at Secure Freedom Radio in a moment when there's an awful lot to talk about. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for joining us once again at Secure Freedom Radio. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Great to be back. And after that introduction, why don't you just keep talking?
I probably will. But I'm going to give you a chance, too, because some of the things that I want to talk about, you know, at least about as much as I do. And let's start with the sort of business of arms control. As I mentioned, you worked under Henry Kissinger, a man who was an early an enthusiastic advocate of arms control. Give us just your sense, if you would, John Layman, about the nature of the world we're in and the utility of, well, treaties like this newly enacted START treaty, but more generally, the whole prospect of being able actually to constrain real threats to this country through negotiated agreements.
Well, I think there is a minor role for negotiated agreements. They can codify and set rules of what's been agreed. One of the most useful that I've experienced has been the Incidents at Sea agreement with the then Soviet Union Navy, which really settled down the whole issue of how the two navies, which were intertwined throughout the world during the Cold War, could operate together. But those are strictly utilitarian. The idea that arms control treaties can become the medium of achieving peace and stability is a delusion. The United States has repeatedly suffered as a result of this delusion by policymakers, going all the way back to the 1922 Washington Naval Agreements, which sought to stop the buildup of naval power by the Japanese rearming of Germany, among other things. And
it didn't work out so well, as I recall.
It was one of the many contributing causes of World War II, because the only people that adhered to it were the peaceable people and the people for whom it was designed to rein in simply violated it, and Japan kept building naval ships, and Germany rearmed, and the West, the Allies, and especially the United States kept deluding themselves that treaty would protect them. So,
and put them in a very disadvantageous position when it came to the breakout of World War II and the attack on Pearl Harbor and so on, as you know.
Well, absolutely. I think you can make a strong case that were it not for that, the aggressors, certainly the Japanese, would not have been tempted to think they could win and hence would not have attacked. So arms control is, through history, the clinging or the seeking of treaties as a substitute for maintaining a peaceable balance of power has been the cause of more wars than almost any other cause in the last 100 years.
Yeah, this is a a chilling thought on the in the immediate aftermath of yet another of these treaties being spawned, and most especially Secretary Lehman, because, as you know, as I mentioned a moment ago in connection with your old boss Henry Kissinger, but the President of the United States is hell-bent, as best I can tell, on a sort of negotiated arrangement whereby he rids the world altogether of nuclear weapons. My sense of it is that he has come to appreciate, if he hasn't all along, that there's really just one country that he can denuclearize, and that, of course, is ours. But he nonetheless has, I'm afraid, wind in his sails, to use a nautical term, as a result of this treaty and the support that it enjoyed in the Senate to aggressively redouble his effort to move us, at least in an exemplary fashion, towards this end state he seeks. What is your estimation of the likelihood this will work out well, let alone actually produce the desired result?
Well, first of all, statesmen have been talking about zero nuclear weapons since the first atomic bomb was set off. And we have to look at the proposition that somehow the world would be better off by major powers disarming to zero nuclear weapons. And the logic is overwhelming that this would be a terribly dangerous world, because it would then, if the powers that maintain a responsible arsenal of nuclear weapons under redundant and fail-safe controls were to completely do away with their nuclear weapons, the incentive for a Chavez or an Al-Qaeda or whatever, whether it be a rogue state or a rogue power
operation.
Group.
Yeah.
All they had to do is have one nuclear weapon hidden away, or make one secretly, which is quite possible. It's not a piece of cake, but it's been done, and it can be done again. They rule the world. If whomever has the one nuclear weapon when everybody else has none is a ruler. So the idea of pursuing this as a goal that would make things better is ridiculous. And secondly, the idea that we can achieve it is perhaps, thankfully, a delusion. It's not going to happen.
Well, my big concern, Secretary John Lehman, is that what happens in the mere act of pursuing it is that you see the continuing atrophying of our nuclear deterrent as a president who is, as he makes clear, determined to rid the world of nuclear weapons, sees every reason not to take the sorts of steps to keep weapons from being modernized, new designs from being done, let alone any testing of these weapons being done. And I think, just as you've indicated, this is almost certainly a formula for a more dangerous world, not a more secure one.
Well, you put your finger on it, Frank. Nobody really believes that this world would come about, and it would be horrible if it did come about. But the problem is that the believers in negotiating as a substitute for military deterrence will use this as a day-to-day bludgeon against those who wish to maintain a stable balance by keeping a modern and fail-safe military arsenal, both nuclear and conventional. We've seen it time and again. And we clearly have an administration that is a true believer in negotiations can replace military power. And this agreement, well, the START agreement, which has been ratified, is just one small step in the continuing reduction of American military power.
Yeah, and it's portends bigger steps to come, I think, for sure. Secretary Lehman, we're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be back with more of Secretary of the Navy John Lehman under the great President Ronald Reagan, talking about, among other things, terrorism, the threat that is posed to us today and that is likely to loom even larger future. All of that and more with John Lehman, straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
The holidays come and go, but the pictures are forever. How do you want to look? Now is a perfect time to make a new start for the new year ahead. And the first step is calling Judy Singer's MetaSystem at 800-711-JUDY.
On the MetaSystem, I lost 10 pounds the first week, and overall, I think it was 12 weeks, I lost 46 pounds.
Over the past 3 months, I've lost approximately 47 pounds.
With the MetaSystem, I lost 50 pounds.
Looking slimmer and feeling better isn't the whole story. Call 800-711-JUDY right now. The MetaSystem has worked effectively for thousands, and it can and will work for you. And with your MetaSystem purchase by December 29th, Judy Singer will take 10% off and throw in a free Go Anywhere Tote as your Christmas gift. If you're already on MetaSystem, call and see what we've got waiting for you. Say goodbye to the old you, say hello to the new you. Judy Singer's MetaSystem works. Call now, 800-711-JUDY. That's 800-711-JUDY. J-U-D-Y.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
This is the greatest country in the world. Every day, people in America live in 100% freedom. Our military allows us to do that. It's comforting to know that when American lives are lost in defense of our freedom, an organization like TAPS is there to help the friends and families of those who have died while serving our country.
TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Visit us online at TAPS.org or call 1-800-959-TAPS.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back with more with Secretary of the Navy under Ronald Reagan, John Layman, a man who has, as I mentioned earlier, served in a number of capacities that give him a stature that enables us to talk with him about an array of subjects of great importance. And I want to turn to terrorism, but before we do, just picking up on a point you made a moment ago, Mr. Secretary, you mentioned Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. One of the things that I'm struck by is how little attention seemed to have been given in the United States Senate, or for that matter, elsewhere in the country at this point, to the fact that Hugo Chavez has just announced that he is going to allow Iran to bring, at the moment, relatively short range, but nonetheless, ballistic missiles that have been equipped in the past by some with nuclear weapons, and that certainly could become platforms for nuclear delivery systems in the future. In Venezuela, these would be Iranian missiles, and I just wonder, from your perspective, as a longtime student and practitioner of national security policy, what are the implications were we to allow that to happen?
Well, first of all, I think the most disturbing immediate lesson to take from this is that it is one more of the emerging indications that our global deterrence is beginning to disintegrate. That whether it's North Korea or actually Turkey or more roguish states like Venezuela, people, disturbers of the peace around the world have the perception that they can kick sand in Uncle Sam's face now with impunity. And that is a very dangerous development because it can lead to very dangerous miscalculations and a totally dangerous risk-taking by people like Chavez. On the immediate issue of missiles in Venezuela, obviously this is a kind of a replay of the Cuban Missile Crisis because it would give Iran the ability to threaten retaliation if for instance, they were to close the straits or attack Israel or another of our allies. They would assume that because they had missiles pointed at Miami and Atlanta that they could do whatever they wanted with impunity. So it's a very dangerous move. And unfortunately, the response of this administration is so far is to continue to call for negotiations and on the theme that why can't we all be friends? And so I don't
kumbaya.
See being resolved. Yeah, kumbaya, exactly.
We're talking with the former Secretary of the Navy, John Lehman. He currently serves as the chairman of a private equity investment firm named John F. Lehman and Company. He is involved in a number of public policy organizations. I'm delighted to say a member of the advisory board of the Center for Security Policy, among them. He's also the author of five books, many of them having to do with the sea and projection of power and the making of war, including a book by that title. John Lehman, let me ask you, apropos that point about a Cuban Missile Crisis, would it, in your estimation, not be likely that if the United States government under the Obama administration chooses not to try to interfere with the emplacement of these missiles, as of course John Kennedy did many years ago with a naval blockade of Cuba, that at the minimum the American people would expect and probably demand that missile defenses against such weapons being deployed in Venezuela by the Iranians be put into place. And given what we've learned about this New START treaty, as an impediment, the Russians having said, you know, you make any quantitative or qualitative improvements to your missile defenses, we're out of here. Wouldn't that almost immediately bring us up against a serious national security problem? Again, tying into your earlier points about arms control not serving those interests.
Yes, yes, it would. And that's the biggest objection to this New START treaty. It's not so much that the numbers are dangerous, which they're not in terms of each side having 1,500 strategic weapons, but it leaves untouched the 10,000 Soviet so-called tactical nuclear weapons, and it has in its preamble a clear linking of our ability to defend ourselves through missile defense and this treaty, which is a de facto threat to ignore the treaty and right to withdraw from the treaty on the part of the Russians if we go further in missile defense. So clearly, first of all, we can't let Chavez base Iranian missiles in Venezuela. That, if we allow that to happen, it would be a total collapse of American credibility in the world. So something is going to have to be done, even though it's very likely going to have to wait for a new president. But so just on the theoretical question of whether there were missiles in Venezuela, we would, of course, have to deploy a full ballistic missile system. And luckily, we have that, thanks really to Senator Jackson and others, and I know you personally worked on this, when there was a major effort in the Carter administration to de-scope the Aegis cruiser because it had inherent ballistic missile capability.
Anti-ballistic missile, yeah.
Yeah, ballistic missile defense capability. And now, of course, it's the backbone of our ballistic missile defense because of the foresight of your team and in blocking those efforts by the administration to take out the ballistic missile capability from Navy cruisers.
Well, you're kind to throw any of those credits my way. I think that what happened in terms of putting that fleet of Aegis cruisers and, of course, destroyers in place was in no small measure a function of your leadership. So salute back to you, sir. I do want to come, before we break for a moment, to turn your big guns, Secretary Lehman, if I may say that, to the terrorism issue. You served with great distinction on the 9/11 Commission. And were, I think, among the most informed and clear of the commissioners about the nature of the threat that we're facing. We have recently, as you know, pushed forward a book called Sharia, the Threat to America. And I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, but I just would like to invite your thoughts as to what is it that animates the enemy we're confronting, both in the violent kind of terrorism and what I happen to worry about at least as much, the stealthy kind of jihad. And do you have any sense that the United States government, here 9 years after your report, has a clue about the actual character of the problem we're up against?
Well, first of all, I think that your book is must reading, and also our report, the 9/11 Commission report, which is of course in comic book form and books on tape and so forth, which I would urge everybody to read because we went at some great length with pulling together scholarship, but putting it into a very readable form of what the origins of this jihadist movement is, going all the way back to the 7th century. And it's not rocket science. It's very straightforward. There's always been a puritanical strain in Islam, and it's emerged in various times and various places through history that take a literal interpretation of the sacred texts of Islam to put forward the view that non-believers cannot be tolerated and that Islam must be spread by fire and the sword, and that it's a hugely aggressive interpretation of Islam. It never really took hold anywhere except in obscure pockets of Islam in the deserts and so forth.
Until very recently, and I want you to hold that thought, Mr. Secretary, because that's precisely the point I want to get to next, is how has it leapfrogged from this obscurant exercise into something that is now a threat to us truly worldwide? We'll be back with John Lehman on Secure Freedom Radio right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Stephen and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Stephen a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We still have with us, I'm happy to say, John Layman, former Secretary of the Navy, former member of the 9/11 Commission, a man who has both in public and private life contributed greatly to our understanding of the dangers of this world and the need for a strong America. He has practiced peace through strength, not just recommended it, and it's always a privilege to have you with us. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for being back.
Great to be here again.
Let's just pick up on the point you were making just before the break, and that is the transformative thing that happened in the last century that has taken what I would call Sharia and turned it into a worldwide and menacing phenomenon.
Well, what happened was the discovery of vast resources of oil around the Persian Gulf, and so it just so happened those were the pockets of Salafist extremism in the interpretation of Islam. And as Saudi Arabia gradually gained control of Saudi and the Emirates gained control of this vast this huge source of revenue A significant portion, some estimate about 20% at the present day, but a significant portion of these vast revenues from the industrialized world were funneled straight into the Wahhabist extremist religious sect, in effect, that then promulgated this intolerant jihadist viewpoint through the building of schools and, in effect, missionary activities with limitless funding behind them that have been operating for the last 50 years now in educating young Muslims in formerly very relaxed and tolerant areas of Muslim, like Indonesia and Malaysia and Turkey and the vast majority of the Muslim world, turning them gradually, the younger generation, into adherence to this intolerant jihadist sect. And so, unfortunately, we've had three administrations in a row now that have utterly ignored that reality and never even raised the issue with the Saudi Arabian or the Emirates governments that they are funding this this jihadist movement through not they're not sending secret money to Osama bin Laden. They are supporting the mosques and schools all over the world that are preaching the duty of young Muslims to go out and kill non-believers.
Right. So, it's kind of a problem. Mr. Secretary, one of the things that I've been struck by and that we've called attention to in our study is the extent to which, far from engaging the enemy, or at least our sometime friends in Saudi Arabia, directly on this point with a clarity that would presumably at least define the problem, if not result in corrective action, our government has actually, in the years since you participated in the 9/11 Commission report, dumbed down our own understanding of the problem. And we've done a view graph. I think when we last talked about this, I mentioned it to you. Not a view graph. That's so 1980s, isn't it? A PowerPoint presentation in which we went through, with the help of our friend Steve Coughlin, an enormously important resource, a member of our team-based study, the numbers of times. Just a crude methodology, but it's one that is instructive. The number of times in your 9/11 Commission report in which words like Islam, Muslim, Sharia, Jihad, Muslim terrorism, Muslim Brotherhood, you know, and the like were used. And it, you know, depending on the word, but it often was hundreds of times. And the response from organizations that are either Muslim Brotherhood or associated with the Muslim Brotherhood, of course, the entity that is the prime mover behind this kind of stealth jihad in the West, took exception to that and insisted that the United States government stop using these terms. And we show how in subsequent products, the FBI's lexicon, the counterterrorism strategy, the White House's national security strategy, even the Fort Hood after-action report, these words have essentially ceased to be employed at all. And I just wonder what you think of the contribution this is almost certainly making to the cluelessness of our own government about the problem we're facing, let alone the failure to take the sorts of corrective actions that you know are needed.
Well, there's no question. You put your finger again on one of the most incredible and dangerous trends going on now. They have it's reached a level of comedy in this administration. They are at such pains.
It would be hysterical if it weren't so serious. I guess
exactly.
It's the point.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, the Fort Hood investigation, where you have a former Secretary of the Army who was the head of the investigation stand up and say religion had nothing to do with this.
As your old boss Richard Nixon would say, please.
Yeah, I mean, but ideas have consequences, and the idea that you can't mention the real cause of the jihadist terrorism around the world is having a very pernicious effect, not only on the younger generation in their being educated in how to understand this phenomenon, to deal with it accurately, but in the actual day-to-day removal of measures that can keep us safer. And I mean, I'm glad to say I live in New York, where at least in the NYPD, this has not by any means taken hold, and they look to thwart where the source is, and that is Islamism. Not Islam, but Islamism.
Well, and to put a finer point on it, I think it's the Sharia component that the Islamists are acting upon, and I think that is heartening, because in New York City, as you say, you do have a commissioner, Ray Kelly, and a team under him that have been pretty clear about mosques as incubators of this kind of so-called radicalism that are now manifesting themselves in so many of the attacks that we've seen, influenced, of course, from folks offshore like Al-Awlaki. But Al-Awlaki used to be, as you know, John Lehman, at the time of 9/11, in a mosque not 20 minutes from our seat of government here in the Washington, D.C. area. Let me ask you this. From your perspective, as a close observer and analyst of these problems of, again, for want of a better term, the word they use, Sharia. When you look at the use of the Muslim Brotherhood and its organizations in the United States, its myriad front organizations, as the vehicle for outreach on the part of our government, and I have to say, to some extent, even NYPD is involved in this, but it's even worse at the federal level and in other municipalities. But can we possibly get this right if we're taking instruction about the nature of the enemy, let alone how to characterize it or how to defeat it, from people who are part and parcel of the enemy's fifth column in this country?
No, it's beyond belief. It's a phenomenon that I have not witnessed in my entire career until now, where you have the federal government actively using the fifth column of the enemy for their own interpretation and advice on how to deal with the issue. It's very pervasive, as you know. Until very recently, a majority of the Muslim chaplains in the American Armed Forces were using texts provided by and paid for by Saudi Arabia, but politically edited by the Muslim Brotherhood and other extremist groups. Similar, that's why there's such a huge phenomenon of homegrown recruitment in the American prisons, because nearly all of the prison chaplains in the U.S. system are basically Wahhabist.
Yeah.
No, been recruited, trained by the Saudi government in most cases, and we wonder why there is a jihadist movement throughout the native Islam population.
Indeed, this is the crux of the matter. It seems to me that if we can't perceive the problem and we're relying on those who are in fact enemy agents promoting the problem, we are disarmed and disabled. John Lehman, we're going to pause for a moment for a break, and we will be back in time to talk with you about the defense budget of the United States, the adequacy of it under these circumstances of a real and growing danger to America and to its interests around the world. Secretary of the Navy John Lehman, under President Reagan, is our guest. He will be joining us for the fourth segment of Secure for Your Radio. Stay tuned.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, Oh, or you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Ever since he was a radical college student, Barack Obama has fancied a world without nuclear weapons. Now, as president, he's made the realization of that vision U.S. policy. In fact, the only country in the world Barack Obama can denuclearize is ours. He seeks to do that through a New START treaty that would make deep cuts in America's nuclear deterrent, but won't have any comparable effect on any other nuclear power. He hopes the U.S. Senate won't notice that his treaty is unverifiable and restricts our anti-missile defenses, that Russia always cheats, and that our arsenal hasn't been upgraded in decades. Worse yet, he insists that this defective treaty be hastily rubber-stamped during the short post-election lame duck session. If this sounds crazy to you, tell your senators to vote no on the New START treaty. This is no time to be disarming America.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back for our final segment with the Honorable John Lehman, now an investment banker in New York City, but a man who has both in his free time in that capacity and in his prior career contributed immeasurably to national security of the United States, and much of it a really living legacy, particularly with respect to the United States Navy. Mr. Secretary, again, welcome back. Great to have you with us. And let's turn now to a topic that I know is near and dear to your heart. As I mentioned earlier, you have spent some time recently sort of trying to provide a second opinion, I guess, for want of a better term, on the adequacy of the budgets that the Defense Department has been preparing, the kind of programs that they would support or not support. And specifically, I'd like to get your thoughts on the now widely repeated narrative that it's time to cut defense spending as part of trying to get our fiscal house in order. Is it advisable? Can it be done without doing grave harm and perhaps inviting more in the future?
Well, it's really looking at the problem through the wrong end of the looking glass, because it is a very severe problem for our global ability to defend the interests of the United States, because our forces are shrinking. part of that has been because of the two wars that we're engaged in. That has taken up virtually 100% of American military capability. The actual defense budget today is 50% larger in constant dollars than it was at the height of the Reagan buildup. But the problem is that far less is coming out the other end. And during the Reagan administration, for instance, we averaged building 28 naval combatants a year. And we are currently, for the last 10 years, averaged 5 naval combatants a year. Yet we've been spending almost exactly the same amount of money in constant dollars and much more in, of course, inflated dollars. The problem is that we have a hugely urgent need in that we have essentially evacuated the Mediterranean. There are no ships for the last 2 years permanently assigned to the Sixth Fleet, and American presence is no longer in the Mediterranean. In the Pacific, the only ships that any Pacific littoral nations see are the ones that make port calls on their way to the Persian Gulf, Indian Ocean. Our fleet today is only 200 ships rather than the Reagan 600 ships, and people see that all over the world. People often ask me, well, where is the 600-ship Navy? Well, I say it's in China. China is building at a rate that we were building during the Reagan administration. They will have a 600-ship Navy, and they are quite openly determined to dominate the Western Pacific and to have the ability to attack the United States from the Pacific. So we are letting that happen. On the other hand, we've allowed the system for providing this defense to descend into chaos. It is totally dysfunctional. We are budgeting $484,000 a year for every active duty soldier and sailor. That compares to about 7,000 in China. And every single major program is overrunning at the rate of teens in overrunning the budget. The reason is that they over the years have abandoned the basic principles that the Reagan buildup was founded on, which is competition. No gold plating, fixed price contracting, and discipline of the requirements to produce something that is very effective but not gold plated. So
now let me just ask you, Mr. Secretary, because I think when people hear this litany, it sounds incredible. It sounds horrifying, really, that we're paying so much, we're getting seemingly so little. What are the implications, in your estimation, of this kind of practice persisting in terms of, I mean, bring it home to us. What does it mean if the United States is out of the Mediterranean, for example? What does it mean if Communist China has a 600-ship Navy and we have a 200-ship Navy, if it's capable of denying us access to its littoral waters and perhaps increasingly able to threaten ours and us, for that matter?
Well, what it means is our allies are hedging their bets, and our potential adversaries are becoming real adversaries. It's the shadow cast by power. Our shadow is shrinking. It's unheard of, but 3 years ago, the U.S. Navy issued a notice to seamen that they had to stay 600 miles east of the coast of Africa because the U.S. Navy could no longer guarantee freedom of the seas in that area, an area larger than the Mediterranean. It's no accident that the Turkish politics are turning Islamist because they no longer can count on the United States as a permanent, reliable presence in keeping the peace there. Europe is becoming a neutralist area. They're all announcing in this time of fiscal troubles that they're halving their defenses. So they're no longer, Europe is no longer a major military power, even collectively adding them all up. China is on the rise. India is on the rise. Neither of those are have our interests in the Pacific at heart. Certainly we need to be maintaining as good relations as we can for those who are worried also about China, but we're providing a distance set for countries like India to cooperate with us, because we are no longer they see what's happening. We're disarming. The average Air Force aircraft now is 24 years old, we are getting out of the deterrence business. So North Korea feels free to threaten and actually take military action against allies. Japan is trimming its sails. These actions have consequences, and we're seeing them every day.
And they will, in due course, translate into issues for us here at home, not just our interests abroad. Mr. Secretary, let me ask you this question. You have spent a lot of time thinking about, and in fact have actually flown off of, aircraft carriers. We're told now that part of the Chinese buildup is array against our aircraft carriers, which remain the backbone of our Navy, as you know, anti-carrier ballistic missiles, very precise missiles capable of raining down considerable death and destruction on a carrier with high confidence, even as the Chinese apparently are now beginning to launch as part of that new massive Navy their own carrier fleets. What would you, if you were Secretary of the Navy today, be doing to try to configure our naval forces for this kind of threat environment?
Well, first of all, it's nothing really new. That the Chinese ship ballistic missile is highly overblown. There are defenses against that weapon system. The Soviet Union had one, not quite as modern technology, but they had a ballistic missile with a maneuvering warhead aimed at carriers. It's not really a new phenomenon, and the defenses of the Aegis cruiser and of the fighter aircraft and jamming aircraft and the other classified systems that we have can deal with it. There's no magic arrow or shield. It's a constant interaction, but it's one that requires constant R&D to stay ahead of the threat. And
are we doing that in the shortest of time we have, Mr. Secretary? Are we taking the steps to prepare for that kind of future?
I don't think we're able to be spending the kind of R&D money that is in the budgets that are being handed down today. Too much of the money is going to fight the wars that we're in, and too much of the money is being paid for this vast overhead. You know,
yeah. John, we're going to have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Yeah. Thank you. We're just hard up against the stops. We've had a spectacularly interesting hour with you, and I appreciate so much you taking the time. And we've obviously left some things unsaid, so come back to us soon to finish up. But in the meantime, many thanks for your service, and my very best to you and your family, and Godspeed. We'll talk to you soon. And that's it for this installment of Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you all for listening. I hope you'll do so again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Till then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.